Welcome to the Apple Context Machine, a podcast about all things Apple with your hosts, Jeff Gamet and Brian Chaffin.
Today is September 30th, 2009, and this is the Apple Context Machine, episode number 156, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, echo chamber.
It's really weird.
That's weird. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
You know, first, Brian, I just have to point out that you are the consummate professional. Even though I still have not updated the script to work off of for the beginning of the show, to show the correct URLs and email addresses, you get it right.
I know. It's you know, such a difficult task, and yet I managed to get through it with much aplomb.
Yeah, I'm really impressed. And how about our new studio announcer?
Yes, our new studio announcer. Well, actually, I think that Bob's eventually going to be our studio announcer.
Well, that's okay because, you know, times are tough all the way around. So getting a temp job for an announcer, that's okay.
True enough. By the way, I'd like to point out that Michael Vesey sent us a tweet, as the case may be, saying that he misses the guns. Doesn't that it really seems dangerous to encourage me?
Yeah, these people have no idea what they're doing when they encourage you.
Exactly.
I mean, they don't have to put up with us every day.
They don't. It's good for them.
Yeah.
But what they can do is follow. That's such a great segue, dude. I love you for that. I love you so much. I can't even just let it go and just use it. I gotta make a big deal about it. And anyway, you can follow us on Twitter. Jeff on a daily basis, me on a when it strikes my fancy basis. I'm at twitter.com/TMOBrian.
Did you just smack your ass when you said that?
No. I did, however. I sort of clapped my hand, you know, did the back of one hand into the palm of the other for emphasis.
Okay.
TMOBrian.
Okay, well, at this end of the TMO Towers, it sounded like you just totally didn't ask that, but that's okay.
And, you know, I'm not sure how you envision me actually recording, how I'm standing or sitting, but, you know, that's interesting that's where you went with that.
That's okay. We should just leave that as is.
Yeah. Where are you on Twitter?
I'm at twitter.com/jgamet. That's J-G-A-M-E-T.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and that's where people can go and find all these little odd things happening in my head, just like this.
Yeah. And speaking of odd things, I think we're going to bring the bass back for our bumpers. We still have the Atomic Love Bombs giving us our intro song. We're going to do the bumpers with the bass this week, I think.
Yeah, and I'm okay with that because we're sharing the love.
We are sharing the love.
Yeah.
So, hit it, Ricky.
Man, that felt just like old times. Yeah. All right, here we go. Apple's App Store has served up 2 billion apps and counting. AT&T brought the iPhone into 2001 with MMS support, but that didn't stop one owner from jumping on the lawsuit express. China is finally getting the iPhone. Microsoft is offering up some tablet ideas of its own, and Apple fed the rumor mill some tablet goodness.
Apple's App Store has served up some 2 billion app downloads as of this week, and the company says the online store is home to some 85,000 iPhone and iPod Touch applications as well. And I think only a handful of them involve farting. Apple's App Store launched in July of 2009 and hit 1.5 billion application downloads by its first anniversary only 2 months ago. So far, more than a half a billion more apps have been downloaded in this quarter alone, and company CEO Steve Jobs says that the downloads are still accelerating.
And as promised, AT&T began activating MMS support for iPhone owners on September 25th. The update lets iPhone 3G and 3GS owners include photos in text messages, bringing Apple's mighty smartphone in line with pretty much every cheap cell phone circa 2001. AT&T is bundling the cost of MMS messages into iPhone owners' SMS plan, so they won't have to pay extra for texting photos of their cats or lunch to friends. Sending a message with a photo and text, however, counts as two text messages because AT&T splits those apart.
Cha-ching!
Yeah, well, there you go. Now, TMOs receive questions from readers about the MMS support, with some people reporting that they receive incoming MMS messages from users on other carriers, the way the iPhone has previously handled such messages, meaning plain text SMS text with a link to the MMS graphic that can be viewed through their web browser. AT&T, however, confirmed for the Mac Observer that iPhone MMS is compatible with other carriers, and that means that an AT&T customer with an iPhone can send and receive MMS messages to and from MMS users on other carriers.
At least at some point.
Right.
Because people are having problems.
Right. But it looks like it's getting better, so I'm hoping it's just a thing with everyone trying out MMS and they broke it.
Yeah, and speaking of MMS, it being implemented, of course, means that we have one knuckle dragger who's already filing a lawsuit against both AT&T and Apple. Kyle Irving is attempting to start a class action against the firms for being lied to about MMS. Mr. Irving alleges he was told at an AT&T store that the iPhone he was purchasing back in June would support the newly announced MMS technology Jeff mentioned above. Of course, Apple VP Scott Forstall told everyone and their brother that AT&T won't or wouldn't be activating MMS until, quote, later this summer, unquote, which was a topic that was then much discussed and bandied about around the interwebs to everyone's discontent. As it is, AT&T didn't turn MMS on until September 25th, technically 3 days after, the end of summer, but the damage was already done to Mr. Irving, as he had to endure more than 3 months without it. Despite the promises he said were made at the AT&T store, when you look at somebody in the eye and you make with them, and they make promises they should live up to those promises. But they didn't. They lied to him, and they did not have MMS. They didn't. He wasn't there. And he'll make them pay. Oh, they'll pay. They'll pay with all the rest. You're encouraging me.
I can't help it. It's my special way. I totally forgot where we were. Oh, I remember now. It's China Unicom next.
Yeah.
All right. China Unicom will finally move the iPhone out of China's gray market when it starts selling the handheld on October 1st, which means the iPhone will officially be available to one of the world's largest cell phone markets. China Unicom will offer 8 different subscription plans, and depending on which plan users sign up for, they may be eligible for discounted phone prices or a free 32-gigabyte iPhone 3GS if they prepay for a year of service in advance. Subscribers won't, however, get to take advantage of Wi-Fi like other iPhone owners around the world, thanks to Chinese government regulations. Instead, if they want that, they're going to have to turn back to the gray market again to get their Wi-Fi iPhones.
Hey, Jeff, guess what?
Chicken bat.
You win! Yay! Guess what else?
Do tell.
Microsoft is working on a new handheld tablet form factor called Courier.
Okay. I think chicken butt was funnier, but whatever.
Go ahead and give the joke that you gave during our run-through.
All right. So, yeah, they had to go with Courier because Comic Sans is already taken.
Exactly. Anyway, so Microsoft, handheld, called Courier or so leaked videos published by Gizmodo would suggest, the device, which one would be excused for thinking is an attempt to answer Apple's still unannounced handheld tablet, appears to be a small touchscreen handheld, smaller than the company's existing Windows-based tablets. The videos that have been circulating are thought to each represent a different approach that Big Redmond is testing for the project. What we've seen so far is a user interface centered around an open book paradigm called the, quote, infinite journal, unquote. Use your finger to flip from page to page of internal content, so to speak. And with all the input and control for the device being either finger gesture-based or stylus-based. The most surprising thing about the video, however, is not so much as its existence, but the fact that it looks like Courier might not even suck. That's because I didn't have anything to do with it.
And then I'm encouraging you again.
I got to work on my bomber, though. It's a little off. I apologize, folks.
I still appreciate it, so, you know, there's that. All right, Apple tossed the rumor mill and iTablet dreamers a bone this week when it hired former Newton MessagePad team member Michael Chow as Vice President of Product Marketing. Mr. Chow last worked for Apple some 15 years ago on the MessagePad project, so naturally the assumption is that he'll be involved in an Apple tablet computer project. Apple isn't saying what he'll be doing other than to say he reports directly to Phil Schiller. Regardless of whether or not Mr. Chow will be involved in a tablet project, his job history indicates at the very least that he winds up being involved in interesting and exciting new products.
And that sound once again means that it's time for the Context Machine within the Context Machine, which is where Jeff and I delve a little more deeply into the news to provide context for what's going on. You know, we should maybe think about the Context Machine within the, anyway.
You know, it's sort of like we're making our own Mobius loop of logic.
Or something.
Or something.
Speaking of logic, let's talk about this MMS lawsuit.
You know, I'm trying to figure out where the speaking of logic and MMS lawsuit fit together, but that's okay. Let's roll with it.
So, on the surface of it, of course, this whole concept is ridiculous in that Apple clearly said that MMS wouldn't be coming in the States until later this summer.
Right. Yeah, that was very clear.
That was very clear. However, what Kyle Irving says in his lawsuit is that he was told that in an AT&T store that MMS was supported right out of the box.
So he's suing Apple for something that AT&T told him, even though Apple made it very clear that MMS support wasn't coming until later.
Yes, but that's probably just SOP. You know, in other words, Apple's being thrown into the mix because, you know, they A, have lots of money, and B, why not? I mean, that's what these bottom feeding attorneys do.
Okay, that I can see that the whole why not philosophy tends to pervade the bottom feeding end of the legal profession.
Yes, and we were able to talk to an attorney who went over the filings and offered us some opinions. And basically, what he was saying is that the entire case will hinge upon whether or not he can prove that AT&T told him this.
That's going to be a hard thing for him to prove, unless he was actually videotaping the sales rep saying that. That's going to be really tough to prove.
Yeah, and it would also a big part of it will also hinge around whether or not they could prove that this was some sort of AT&T policy, which I would be flabbergasted if they could. You know what? If this really actually happened the way Mr. Irving says it does, it just seems. You know, Occam's razor suggests that it's a misunderstanding.
Right.
More than anything else.
Right. And especially since AT&T had information on their website, too, about questions relating to when MMS and tethering were coming.
Yeah. So, you know, it could have been anything from a misunderstanding on the sales representative side or a misunderstanding of what a sales representative said to Mr. Irving.
All right, I have a third possibility, which is that Mr. Irving thought, I bet I could make a lawsuit out of this.
I guess.
And wasn't overly concerned about what the sales rep may or may not have actually said.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. But the whole thing is just kind of, it's just ridiculous. Apple was very upfront. I mean, they had a list of countries that were going to get MMS immediately, and then a list of countries that were going to get it in a couple of weeks, and then Apple, you know, or the United States with AT&T was, quote-unquote, later this summer. And, you know, right. We talked about it. Everybody talked about it. Everybody was, AT&T, you know, admittedly, maybe Mr. Irving isn't like us and hangs out on the web all the time and reads all the tech sites and stuff.
Then he should turn in his iPhone right now.
Indeed. Indeed. But, I mean, you know, be that as it may, the information was out there, and I don't know. I would be flabbergasted to see this actually go anywhere.
I have a feeling it's going to get tossed out. That's my guess. And, well, of course, we'll have to wait and see it. And weirder things can happen than a judge saying, hey, yeah, I'll let you take this suit farther. And, of course, I can only imagine with Apple's legal team right now, I can only imagine them saying, you want to go to court over this, pal? Okay. And it'll turn into an ugly mess.
Yeah, and of course, you know, Apple and AT&T both will be trying to keep this from becoming a class action. You know, they'll be trying to pick apart the argument about whether or not there even is a class. And nothing's going
to
happen.
No, and you know, it will be very easy for Apple to make it very clear that they provided this information to people up front. All they have to do to start is play the recording of the WWDC conference keynote,
right,
where Apple made a point to hold AT&T out like a scapegoat because MMS wasn't going to be there on day one.
Yeah, I would say that was absolutely the case, too. Apple was basically saying it's their fault.
Yeah, and then there's information on both companies' websites, a ton of articles all over the interwebs about the whole thing. Yeah.
Well, so one of the things that our attorney friend told us was that, and I'm quoting, knowledge about the delayed availability of MMS on the iPhone that was available from the press and other public sources of information won't be imputed to Mr. Irving or any member of his proposed class unless Apple or AT&T can show that plaintiff knew or should have noticed or should have notice of the delayed availability of MMS on the iPhone from those public sources of information. In other words, Apple would have to prove that Apple and AT&T would have to prove that the dude saw this stuff.
Okay, so they won't be able to prove that he saw this stuff, but he won't be able to prove that an AT&T employee explicitly told him that MMS was available as soon as he bought the phone.
Unless he's got a recording.
Unless he has a recording.
Which we don't know. We have no idea.
Right. I don't know.
It's just, it's enough to lament the status of our legal system in the States sometimes. I mean, you know, there's so many good aspects of our legal system, and yet you've got these bottom-feeding trolls like this that, you know, do nothing but cost the economy money.
Right, and unfortunately, in the end, if this case does get to move forward, we, as Apple and AT&T customers, will be footing the bill.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Well, yeah, one way or another.
Yeah, because the money that we pay into those companies for products and services, that's where money comes from to go to court with doinks that are bottom feeding simply because they can.
Uh-huh. Hey, you know, I just saw a comment come in on our PCALC article. We didn't mention the PCALC thing in the news, but maybe we should just go ahead and take a moment to.
Yeah, sure, we can do right that now. Because it's our show.
That's true. It is. So the folks at TLA Systems that have PCALC,
right? The iPhone calculator app. It's like a little HP programmable calculator.
Yep, and they've got two. They've got a light version and a fully programmable version, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And they released version 1.8 today that includes this obscenity filter. That, so if you were to type in, what is it, 5135800, does that sound right? No, there's an extra five there. 5138008.
There we go.
Turn it upside down rather than seeing boobies. Boobies. Rather than seeing boobies, it'll say censored. it's just brilliant. I mean, and we're talking about the long running joke. I remember doing this when I was in fifth grade, having a calculator and typing in whatever Shell Oil is or hell backwards with the numbers and stuff. I just thinking it was the funniest thing ever. And it seems that all these years later, people will still do that sometimes.
Well, duh.
So there's a little filter that you can flip on that will say censored instead of actually showing anything if you turn your iPhone upside down, which is just such a funny use of the accelerometer and just a great effort on their part to get some free press and I love it. But one of the comments that just came in from Sir Harry Flashman is someone else had asked, this is a growing problem, because when I wrote the article up, I called it a growing problem as a joke, I might add, you know.
Right, right.
And so Harry says, no, it's a going problem. Ask your doctor if Avidart is right for you. And then he said, good grief, I hope these calculator perverts don't discover the internet. that's funny stuff.
That's awesome.
Funny stuff. All right, while before we move on to our next topic, we have a couple of bits of business to attend to.
Right, like our sponsor for this week's show.
Our awesome sponsor for this week's show.
That's right, which is Smile on My Mac. And the application that we're in love with this week is Text Expander Touch. Am I right?
That is, in fact, what we're talking about. And tell us what it is.
Okay. Yeah, I've noticed I get to talk about Smile on My Mac products a lot, but probably because I think I use pretty much all of them.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. So Text Expander is an application that you can get for the Mac that will auto-expand words and phrases and scripts and things that you type in based on the custom abbreviations you've made. Text Expander Touch brings that same functionality to the iPhone and iPod Touch, which is great because, you know, you have a tiny little keyboard and just your thumbs, and so you can type in your abbreviations and you get the expanded text. And it's really cool. The thing that people have to keep in mind is that because Apple doesn't allow background processes, that you need to go to the Text Expander Touch application to type in your stuff, and then you can either send it to mail or some of the Twitter applications, or you can put it on your clipboard and put it in other apps that way. Mm-hmm. Except that they've released an SDK so that other iPhone app developers can add Text Expander support into their applications. And we're starting to see that happen. So Tweety 2.0, which is coming out soon, is going to have that support. Write Room Touch, or Write Room for the iPhone, but I can't remember what they're calling it. That has the support built into right now, and it works really, really well. I've been trying it, and it's so cool when you sit there and type, and you type in one of your abbreviations, and you hear that same boom sound that you would hear on your Mac, and your mm-hmm. screen just fills up with all this text that was going to take you forever to type. It's a beautiful thing. So it's a fantastic little application. It adds in a lot of time-saving features. You can actually share snippets and snippet groups with other people, like over your local network. So you can get snippets to and from your Mac. You can share them with other people that have iPhones. It's very cool.
That sounds super cool.
It is, and everyone should go out and get it right now because it is that cool, and it's a very, very awesome utility.
You know, it's interesting, those companies that seem to always do everything right.
Yeah, and
do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely, and it's great that there's a lot of companies out there that can do everything right. And it's also great that Smile on My Mac is one of them.
And it's even better that they sponsor us.
Yes, it is. You know, they sent me the coolest mug once. It's awesome. I have a Smile on My Mac anniversary mug.
Huh. I don't have one.
Yeah, well...
Gene.
Yeah, well,
I'm just kidding. Gene's awesome. So you should support Smile on My Mac because they support us. And they support a lot of podcasts in the Mac web.
They do.
They've been, I mean, really seriously instrumental in supporting the entire podcast concept. And you should support them because they support us. They're good folk.
They are. And, Brian, just so you know, if you want to complain to Gene in person about not having a Smile on My Mac mug...
I would never do because she's awesome.
That's true. But, okay, so you could at least say hi to her in person.
I look forward to seeing her again because we're going to be at the...
The Macintosh Computer Expo.
That thing, yeah. This weekend.
That's right. That's in what? Petaluma?
Petaluma this Saturday.
Right. So we're going to have a booth there so you can come by and say hi and see both of us.
Yep.
And I'm doing a presentation at the expo on all the really cool things that you can do with your iPhone.
Which I will have to miss because I'll be at the booth.
Well, you know, the great thing is I can just tell you.
That's true. You can just tell me.
Yeah.
We'll work it out somehow.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. Maybe Gene will sit at our booth and then you can come see me talk.
Indeed. So that's this weekend, Saturday. We're going to be there. Seeing as how I'm actually going to get this up today instead of like a week from now, that actually means that people have a couple of days' notice.
That's true. And if you happen to listen to the podcast late, and this is after October 3rd, we're sorry we missed you there.
Indeed. Now, the other thing we have to do, we have a little bit of business before we get on to our other Context Machine topic. We have the to pick the winner for Bob's book.
That's right, we do. But we couldn't do it last time because you couldn't find your dice.
I moved recently and I couldn't find my dice. Well, I found my dice, which means that we can select the winner. Which is a good thing. So what we're doing is we're giving away a copy of Snow Leopard for Dummies by Bob Dr. Mac Levitis.
Sweet.
And it's a great book. And he's going to autograph it and he's going to send it to you directly. You know what, dude? We've had so many people enter for this contest probably because we gave them an extra episode to do it. Why don't we give away two of them?
You know, I'm okay with that. And I guess this is a perfect example of procrastination paying off for people.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. So I am going to roll the dice. You're going to hear it. And I'm going to move the microphone. So I'll be right back. Okay, the first winner is Big Bill.
Yay!
Woo! And our studio audience seems to like that, too.
Actually, his name is Phil McKinney. And our second winner is Mr. Scott Heiner.
Nice.
So, there you go. Congratulations, guys. Bob will be sending you a book, a signed book, I might even add, probably almost immediately. He's really responsible about such things.
He is. So we just need to make sure we let him know right away.
Indeed. And sorry you didn't win this time, Khalid.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, dude.
And now I'm going to reposition my microphone. Now, Cal, there's one other thing I wanted to talk about in this context machine, and that is the courier thing.
You know, the courier, when I first watched the video, I thought, well, that looks like a really well-thought-out product. And my second thought was... And except for the fact that it doesn't have the 80s music in it, it reminds me a lot of the Navigator, the Knowledge Navigator.
Mr. Scully's.
Yeah. So for people that don't know what I'm talking about, do you really call yourself Apple fans? What's wrong with you? No, actually, if you don't know what I'm talking about, back in the 80s, Apple produced a video where they showed off technology concept, and it was like this little flat tablet thing that handled all of your information, and you could do communication stuff through it, and it would remind you of your appointments, and it was a research tool, and it just it was in so many ways what I saw when I saw the Courier video. Except that the Knowledge Navigator was still cooler.
Yeah, I can see that. But that said, I got to say that what we saw in this video. Okay, and let's offer some more contextual information. Let's emphasize first of all that you know this may not be real, but I think it probably is, and that it is probably one of many such approaches that Microsoft is working on.
Okay, you know, if the tablet, the Courier tablet, is real, and Microsoft actually implements what they showed us, it would be very cool, and I would be very interested in getting my hands on one. And that's saying a lot.
Yeah, I honestly have no doubt that whatever Apple does is going to be freakishly better, but this is far better than what I would have thought. Well, you know, and it could be that these videos aren't actually let me try this again. It's not definite that they were made with a working product.
Oh, right. So they could have animated the screens.
Yeah, the whole thing could be animated. It could have been done in any number of ways, and so even if it is real, doesn't actually mean that it's real,
right? Yeah, they could have even had like a massive computer off screen with a cable tethered into the tablet, and it was just acting as nothing more than a touch interface.
Well, yeah, they probably don't need to do that though. I mean, you can pack enough power into a handheld device right now to do everything we saw. And, you know, what we saw, like, you know, finger flipping pages and, you know, writing notes and with the handwriting recognition, you know, actually converting that into either command or text. We saw a little bit of surfing. We saw, I don't know, we saw some things. I didn't love their approach. I didn't love the so-called Infinite Journal. I hate the name. It's a ridiculous name because it's not really infinite.
Right.
But it wasn't awful. And it wasn't Windows, which kind of... Now, one of the things that Gizmodo said is that this video was made by a third-party company that was actually working with an internal Microsoft studio to actually produce the video. But without knowing more, one of the first things I thought of was, well, maybe this is someone outside of Microsoft coming up with the ideas.
Oh, okay, that's a possibility too. I mean, the ideas that they showed in the video were, I thought, very forward-thinking. Even though I made the joke about the Knowledge Navigator, it was very forward-thinking. And the approach...
Well, it's forward-thinking through rose-colored glasses with a backwards lens.
There we go. And that, and you know, and if you take a look at what Microsoft has produced to date, as far as tablet-type computing devices go, their implementation has been less than optimal.
No, I completely agree with that, and that's because they tend to implement they tend to implement things from the standpoint of what companies need.
That's true. They design by committee.
They're designed by committee, but you know, like they worked to give for the tablet version of the Windows OS that came out 3 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
Like one of the things that it included was, you know, a proprietary magazine format, so that companies could offer magazines that you could flip through and stuff, and you know that's great. Except for they designed that around what the magazine companies wanted, not necessarily as to what people wanted. But right. When I look at this video that we saw for the Courier, I see something that seems like it was designed much more along the lines of how a user would actually use it.
Now, I remember seeing some of the early concept videos of the UMPC, and you know the smaller tablet type device that was supposed to be the killer device of all time.
Yeah.
And those concept videos, in many ways, were like this, where they showed these awesome features being implemented in this really sleek way. And what ultimately shipped was this diluted, kind of twisted version of that idea, because Microsoft had to make it fit what the developers, the product developers, were going to actually produce.
Plus, they're always designing from the standpoint of how do they release a product that will further leverage Internet Explorer, or that will further leverage, you know, MSN Live or Bing or whatever. They're always designing from the standpoint of what works for them as opposed to what people want to use. And by and large, I think that is, as we discussed before, one of the big differentiating factors between Apple and Microsoft.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, well, part of Microsoft's business model is market share, and gaining market share has nothing to do with product quality. Or it has little to do with product quality, and they've been very good at leveraging their products to gain market share without significantly improving quality overall.
Until recently. Recently, they've been losing share with IE. They've been losing share with Windows. I don't know if they're losing share with Office, but it wouldn't surprise me if they were losing share with Office. And although that said, they've been gaining share with, I think, the Xbox. I think the Xbox is clearly one of the dominant gaming consoles on the market. They're probably going to gain share with Bing, to be fair. And but you know, when it comes to their traditional software offerings, they've been losing share, and they've been losing share because they've been designing products from the standpoint of gaining share for other products, and they're not making products that they want to use. They're making products that they want to leverage.
Right.
And you know, that's a big part of why. It's a big part of why I don't like most Microsoft products, at least ones that don't come from the Mac Business Unit.
Yeah, well, you know, with the Mac Business Unit, at least you have a group of developers that want to work with the Mac, and they get how the Mac works, and they get how Mac users want their software to work.
They are Mac users.
Yeah, exactly.
The Mac developers that they hire are Mac developers. And that is a huge part of why the Mac business unit rocks, or at least in my opinion. Be it may, getting back to Courier. I would be really surprised if whatever the company ends up releasing is anywhere near as cool as what we saw in that video.
I'd be surprised if it is, if for no other reason than the fact that Microsoft would want to undercut the price of whatever Apple might be working on. And I have a feeling, based on what we saw, that they may not be able to make that happen. So they'll have to start trimming down and removing features and going with slower processors and things. And so they'll end up with something that is a shadow of what we saw in the video.
Maybe. I'd be surprised if they can even actually implement what we saw. Like, even if they made the decision that we're going to do this and we're not going to change a damn thing about it because people like that video, even if they went with that approach, I think that the company would find it very difficult to actually do.
Probably. Well, if you look at the Zoom product line, that was something that Microsoft started from scratch, in essence. Mm-hmm. And regardless of whether or not people like the Zoom, they couldn't produce a product themselves in the beginning. They had to go with I think it was a Toshiba player that they rebranded as their own. And it wasn't until, well, really I'd say the Zoom HD came out, that they finally had a product that they had created. So if they have to go the same route to get a tablet-ish type device out, they may have to go with hardware someone else is making. So, you know, now they actually designed the Xbox right? They didn't buy that from someone else.
Well, they first built them on Macs.
Oh, that's true. And then they hired Bungie to write the software or the games.
They hired Bungie to make Halo. They hired Bungie. Right. They bought Bungie in order to make sure that Halo was Xbox only. Right. Really, that's what they did.
And it worked.
But the Xbox is based on Windows, and so it was an internal team that developed. I don't know who designed the shipping hardware. My guess it was probably their engineers, and they were originally actually working on them on Macs because they had opted to use the G5 processor for the initial generation of Xboxes.
Right, which I think is kind of funny.
It is funny. They went to the G5 just as Apple was going away from it.
Right. The irony.
The irony. That's funny. And that actually is irony. Are you hearing us, Alanis? That actually is irony. Take note.
See, I keep encouraging you. I need to learn to stop laughing.
Yeah. That wouldn't be good.
No, actually, that would be a sad day.
All right, so we're hungry. We got to go.
Yeah, actually, we are.
Yeah, plus we have things going on this evening, and I want to get this posted today. So we're going to wrap it up there.
I think that sounds like a good idea. All right. So that said, if you have anything to comment on, add, or question, send your audio or text comments to acm@macobserver.com. And remember, succinctness is next to steveliness. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback. Feel free to follow me on Twitter. That's twitter.com/jgamut.
And you can follow me at TM O'Brien. That's Brian with a Y. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom. Thanks, Ricky. And the theme song is Push Me Under by the Atomic Love Bombs. And our sponsor this week, Smile on My Mac. That's all for this week.
And you've made it this far, so you might as well stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer. Take us out, boys.
Down. After all standing in my buildings. On it still I cannot go. We're trapped by lies that we both know. I can't see a way out now. I will not go no matter how. You push me under, you hold me down. After all, I think I'd rather.